As you let your body relax and your mind relax, it can be helpful to bring to mind that the self, because your self is whole and complete and the source of happiness, in fact the only source of happiness, the mind really doesn't need to do anything or to accomplish anything. To experience fullness from its own standpoint. When Swamiji went to visit a disciple of Ramana's shortly after Ramana had passed away, he was burning to know what should I do to find peace, to become happy. And the old sadhu that was there, who was actually a very quiet man who didn't speak much, he said, "You shouldn't do anything. There's nothing that you have to do. To become whole or for the mind to have an experience of joy or happiness. Because the source of the joy, the source of the wholeness that we seek, is not away from the mind. The source is your being. We can notice the truth of this again and again and again throughout the day. what my mind really wants is to be whole and complete, to feel all is well with me. The only reason I try to manipulate the environment, to control the environment, to fulfill my desires, is so that I can feel all is well with me. I am whole and complete. But the struggle to control the environment, to control my prarabdha, to fulfill my desires, so that I can become whole and complete, usually makes me feel unwhole and incomplete. Because I'm looking for that well-being, that feeling, that sense of self, that sense of wholeness. Looking where it is not, rather than relaxing into where it actually is. It's important to know what it is that I really want, do I really want the desired object? Or do I want the wholeness and completeness that I believe the desired object would give me? As I realize, as I understand, as I see, that it is the self that is the source of the mind's well-being and wholeness, and the attitude or motivation in reference to what I do or the way I behave in the world changes. my value system changes naturally. When I meditate, relaxing the body, relaxing my mind, allowing my own being to come into the foreground as though my own presence is my body and mind. Relax. And no one asks that they be different, other than simply to be as they are. Relaxing. It gives me a chance to recognize my own innate wholeness. In meditation, you're not engaged in a pursuit. Rather, you're giving your mind just the opportunity to recognize your own presence, who you are, to relax into that presence. Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitam Ritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantadami Bhagavati Te Bhavadvaishinim. Okay, on verse 48. Yogasta kuru karmani, yogasta kuru karmani, sangam tyaktva tananjaya, sangam tyaktva tananjaya, siddhya siddhyo samo bhutva, siddhya siddhyo samo bhutva, samatvam yoga uchyate, samatvam yoga uchyate. Yogastaha kuru karmani sangam tyaktva dhananjaya. Samaha bhutva samatvam yoga uchyate. All these verses are really going to be unfolding karma yoga. So, after the last verse, 47, which introduced the karma yoga. Yogasta kuru karmani, hey Dhananjaya, the one who's victorious with the bow in war, the one who's victorious in war with his bow, with the idea. Hey Dhananjaya, name for Arjuna. Kuru, imperative, second person singular. Kuru karmani, may you do karmas. Do karmas. Imperative is a command. So kuru karmani, may you do karmas. Being a yogastaha, yogastaha, nominative singular. Being one who is staha, nishta, rooted in yoga, abiding in the yoga, in the karma yoga. May you do karmas. Being a yogastaha, one who's standing firm in the yoga. Kuru karmani, do the karmas. Sangam tyaktva, indeclinable past participle. Having abandoned sangha, abandoning, giving up attachment, abandoning sangam, giving up attachment, yogastaha, abiding in karma yoga. Sta, the root sta tisht, sta means to stand, to be placed in. But placing yourself on that ground, right, in the ground of buddhi, of karma yoga. So yogastaha, kuru karmani, do karmas, as one who's well-rooted, placed in the yoga, standing in yoga, from that position, that, do the karma. Giving up the, having abandoned, having given up, tyaktva, the sangha, attachment, okay? Siddhi asiddhyoho samaha, bhutva, being, having become, samaha, the same, in siddhi and asiddhi, in accomplishment, in success and failure. Siddhi is the success. Accomplishing something is siddhi. You know, achieving something is siddhi. Asiddhi is failing at that. So in siddhi and asiddhi, that's a dwandva compound for the Sanskrit people. Siddhi and asiddhi. So in siddhi and asiddhi, right, samaha, being the same. Then he says, samatvam yogaha uchyate. That samatvam, that sameness of mind, is called yoga. It is that samatvam. Now that tvam affix, that state of being sama, that state of being the same. So we could say sameness, right? That sameness, yogaha uchyate, that is called yoga. Okay, so now it's really starting to really develop what it is. Let's see what it means. certain things that need to be understood when we're talking about Karma Yoga. The term Karma Yoga is meant for the Adhikari. It's the term Karma Yoga is meant for the Mumukshu, the one who is seeking liberation, the one who is gaining knowledge, the one who is exposed to knowledge. because it's first of all, karma yoga. It's not about doing karma. Everybody does karma, right? Everybody does karma for punya, and sometimes does karma that will result in papa. So every human being does good karmas and bad karmas. Even if you're concentrating on just doing good karmas, that's not karma yoga. Karma yoga is the attitude with which you do the karma. And it's the attitude with which you do the karma that allows for the shanti, the equipoise, the samatvam, that equipoise, that relaxation of mind, that is necessary to be able to gain knowledge. Right? And so for that karma yoga buddhi, requires a certain attitudes that are in harmony or in alignment with your knowledge. And I would say what is the primary attitude? And Swamiji talks about this in his commentary. So there's a long commentary, very long commentary he has on Karma Yoga in the handouts that I'm giving. The primary attitude for Karma Yoga is what we call Prasada Buddhi or Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. Ishwara Arpana Buddhi, it means that conviction, that state of mind, that understanding, where I do my actions in Arpana, in worship of Ishwara. Every action I do is keeping Ishwara, keeping the Lord in mind. Or I do all of my actions for the sake of the Lord. And so, what does that mean? How do we operationalize that? What exactly do we mean by it? There's certain understandings here that I'm just going to kind of go through them and kind of unfold them one by one. First understanding is any action that you do as a human being, you do that action for a result. So in karma yoga has to do with the attitude, and that attitude is not, let me do this action, not keeping the result of the action in mind. That is not karma yoga. That's a misunderstanding of karma, a very common misunderstanding of karma yoga. I should do the action without any... it's almost like I should do the action avoiding the result of the action. But in fact, every action that we do is in order to achieve a certain result. It's as simple as if I go to the store to go shopping, I'm going to the store to go shopping. That's why I'm going to the store. If I go into the kitchen to get a drink of water, I have every intention of getting the drink of water. I'm not just going to the kitchen, right? So these actions that I do, I am doing in order to gain a certain result, or I would have no reason to do the action. So this is the human condition. There's nothing positive, there's nothing negative about that. It's just a simple fact. The problem is this. It's not that I'm doing the action in order to gain a particular result, which I would be what they call mudaha. In Sanskrit, the person's like a crazy man. He's doing the action, has no idea why he's doing the action. That's somebody who's not well. And you're doing the action in order to accomplish a result. But in Karma Yoga, I am able to do the action to accomplish a result, and receive the result that I actually get from doing the action as prasad from the Lord. That is much different. Do you see the difference? I am doing the action in order to receive a result, in order to gain a result. But in the previous verse, which is really the key from Karma Yoga, in Karma Yoga, consider yourself, he's talking to Arjuna, Krishna's talking to Arjuna, know you that you are responsible for the action. That you're an adhikari for that. Right? You make a decision to do this action. And so that's your side. You do the action so that in hopes that you will reap this particular result. So that's your domain. My, Krishna's talking as Ishwara, my domain is in the result. I am the karma, what we call karma phala data. I'm using these terms because these are our famous terms and we use them all of the time. Ishwara is the karma phala data, the one who is the giver of the fruits of action. So Ishwara says, the Lord says, see me as the one who gives the result. You be the doer, I give the result. If I am, as the Lord, am giving the result, then how should you receive the result that I'm giving? As you receive prasad in the temple. When you go to a temple, when you go to the temple and you go to the, and they do the puja, and at the end they pass out the prasad. The prasad, as we said this last week, I know. But I want you to keep seeing this in a context. The prasad could be, you know, a drops of water. It could be flower petals. It could be some chandan and some, you know, some ash, some vibhuti. It could be a laddu. It could be a whole meal. There are so many different things that it could be. What if you went to one of the more famous temples expecting to get the full meal? Because there are temples that are noted for that, giving on banana leaf, they'll give a full meal. And so you go to the temple with expectation of having a very extraordinary prasad from the puja. And so you go and you go through the puja with all devotion, and the prasad comes, and today it's flower petals.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might have wished that you got the full meal. But how will you receive the flower petals? That's what it is. It's such a beautiful thing to me. It's not that you had that in your mind, going to this famous, beautiful temple where they give very extravagant prasad. And so you wanted to experience that. You wanted to have that experience. You thought that would be really neat. So you go. But today, you know, flower petals. What does your buddhi do with the flower petals? Does it get mad at Bhagawan for the flower petals? I don't think so. I don't think so. You can have disappointment over the not getting the big banana leaf. But there's no anger over the flower petals. Because prasad. Because it's prasad. So you take those flower petals, put them on your ear, and then you might say, I think I'll come tomorrow too. We might stay another day. Because I really want to experience that. But how do you handle the flower petals? Prasadam. Now, if that's true, then the disappointment of not getting the banana leaf full of food, right, doesn't have an effect on your psyche. There's not a reaction, right? In other words, the desire template, this is the Ajnani, the samsari desire template. I want this so that I can be happy. Right? That's what we come with. Because that's what we know. When a person comes to knowledge, that's what they know in one form or another. That's the conditioning. As a mumukshu, you're on the verge now of not knowing what to do about that because you've realized that in the fulfillment of a desire, you do have a moment of happiness, but it's only momentary. And you've realized that. But what you've realized is that when I fulfill a desire, Yes, I do have the happiness. But it is momentary. So now instead of you knowing, I want this so that I can be happy, you do have that template, but you've added something onto it. I want this so that I can be happy, but the happiness is only temporary, and what I really want is something that's abiding, not something that's a momentary flash in the pan. And so that's what makes a person a mumukshu, desirous of liberation, because you realize that this is all temporal. All of these moments of well-being are temporal moments. Temporal moments, when you lose your state of well-being, that is not a happy situation. So I want to just be a happy person who then experiences the ups and downs of the world. I want to be a whole person that is not at the mercy of the world. And so for this, with this recognition, this mumukshutvam, I gain this mumukshutvam, and it's that condition that brings me to this teaching. Now, coming to this teaching, here I am. I've come to this teaching. Bhagavan has arranged that because of the mumukshutvam. And so you're united with your teacher. That's the law. That's what Ishwara says throughout the Upanishads. When that mumukshutvam is there, you will get your teacher. But now here you are. You've come to this knowledge. You're exposed to this teaching. You have your teacher. But the kartritvam, the doership, is still there because your mind hasn't had a chance, right, to gain the knowledge, gain knowledge to the depth and clarity that my mind just simply abides with myself and doesn't go through all of this. Having to get this to become happy, to have this moment of happiness, but I went through all the struggle and pain to get it, and then actually I didn't get it at all and became even more miserable, and this didn't work out, that didn't work out, and blah, 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 it goes on and on and on. So I'm caught up in a network of pain, you know. So that has to unwind, and it takes time for the kartritvam, the sense of doership. Sense of doership, which is this. This is the manifestation of the sense of doership. It's very involved with raga dvesha. It's, I need this to be happy. That's what brings out the doership. Doership means, I need to control Ishwara. We probably don't think about it as Ishwara. I need to control the creation. Why? You're not wrong in feeling that way. It's because of ignorance a person feels that way. I need to control this creation so I can be happy. Because if I don't have it like this or like that or like that, I won't be happy. That's the ignorance. That's the self-ignorance that has caused me, right, to project my happiness on an object and then feel that once the instant I projected my well-being on an object, oh no. You know? Because now, if I projected my wholeness, my well-being, my love, that all is well with me onto an object or a situation, that object or situation is away from me. And I don't have control of it. Ishwara, Krishna is just reminding us of that. You know, you don't have control of the world. You can't just decide. I mean, you can, but we find that it doesn't work. You can't just say, I want it to be this way, and then it will be that way. Because you don't have control over the world. And so, to whatever degree, even by the smallest whiff, the language they use, just the smallest trace, you have superimposed your well-being onto the world, it's an oh no. Because the world is away from you, right? I am here, you are there. I am here, this situation is over here. There's a separation between me and the other. And if there's that separation, then whatever coming together is only temporary. It's finite. The object, the situation is finite. I'm finite. Everything about it is temporal. And even that's a temporal element. But then there's the lack of control. You know, I might not be the only one in the world that wants that object. And maybe that object doesn't want me. Maybe I want you, you don't want me. I love you, you don't love me. Right? I respect you, you don't respect me. It goes on and on and on. I want this to be this way because of this and this and this, so that you'll feel like this and this and this. So this will be like this and this and this, so that I will feel loved and happy. That is what it's all about. You know? That's the whole problem. And so now then this is the Kartrutvam. The Kartrutvam is that need for control. I want this so that I can be happy. That's basically the Kartrutvam. Think of the implications of that, because it's the instant that that's the case, you, the ego, the ahankara, comes roaring into being. There is no kartrutvam, doership, when everything is fine as it is. Right? Everything is... let me put it like this way. I am fine as it is. If I say, I'm changing a little bit, if I say everything is fine as it is, that doesn't mean that if my house is dirty, I won't clean it. But if I go to clean my house and the vacuum cleaner is broken, then I'm not at stake. Right? Okay, let me back up a little bit, because I want to get to the Kartrutvam again. The doership comes in for me because of raga dvesha. Is that okay with everybody? Because of the likes and dislikes, the doership comes to life. I have the raga dvesha, the likes and dislikes, because of self-ignorance. Is that all right with everybody? Because these are steps, right? The doership comes to life because of the raga dvesha, the likes and dislikes. By likes and dislikes, I mean, I want this so that I can be happy. That's the full form of it. If it's just, I want this, but if I don't get it, that's fine also. That's not raga dvesha. Those are what we call burnt seeds. They don't manifest as anything. They don't cause any problem at all. But it's the raga dvesha born of ignorance, where you're serious, you're not kidding. I want this so that I can be happy. Means, for me, my happiness is in that. That's the raga dvesha. And so now I realize that this is a mess. It doesn't work. And I become a mumukshu. And I gain this teaching. And now I recognize, I see at the time of teaching, that in fact, this is an illusion. As a student, I understand this is an illusion. This doesn't work because it's not the truth. I see that. I understand and I'm taught the whole dynamics of this. I want this so that I can be happy, and the reason that illusion works is because when I satisfy that desire, my mind relaxes. And in that relaxed, quiet mind, that desireless mind, the wholeness of myself, the fullness of myself reflects in that mind in such a way that I experience happiness. But as an Ajnani, I don't understand that. And so all I realize is that, I fulfilled the desire and I'm experiencing happiness. I don't know that my being is the source of the happiness that's reflected in that mind. That I am the wholeness that reflected in the mind experiences that as happiness when the mind is relaxed. I don't know that. All I know is that you've made me happy. Or that getting this new job has made me happy. Or buying this ice cream cone has made me happy. No. Now I know there's something else going on. And I recognize the truth of it, but my mind is not able to live up to the truth of that because it's not completely clear yet, for one thing. there's a lot of buts in terms of my understanding of Ishvara, in terms of how well the jiva, this body, mind, sense organs, is taken care of and part of the whole, how much I can really relax, how much will I really be taken care of. Those things I don't really know. I have to experience my life in the light of this knowledge, and I have to understand, I have to gain logical, intellectual clarity that accompanies my experience. I have to know, I have to be clear. And so now, what is an attitude? What is the Karma Yoga attitude? That while I'm becoming clear, while I'm gaining this knowledge, how to be with my mind and be with the world in such a way that will allow me to mature, allow this attitude, this knowledge to mature. Accepting the kartritvam is there, accepting that the raga dveshas are there, the likes and dislikes are there, accepting that the sense of doership is there, that my mind isn't completely relaxed into my knowledge. A little aside, that kartritvam, that doership, will always be there as a burnt seed, just like I could say, I'm going to go to the store, right? Or I'm going to do some exercises, or I'm going to make dinner, I want to eat, I'm hungry. That is always there, but it's there as mitya. It's there as mitya, not as something which is real, not as something which is causing you to feel like you need to change Ishvara. You see what I'm saying, everybody? Okay, well, let me go on. So there's two parts to this Karma Yoga attitude. One is this, in this we're dealing with in this verse. It's the samatvam. Yogastaha, abiding in this buddhi, do your action. Abiding in this Karma Yoga buddhi, may you do action. Remaining the same, whether or not you accomplish what you are seeking or don't. That's level one. Okay, there's two levels in this one. That attitude is the prasada buddhi. Okay? The reason that I can truly have that attitude is because I know that the reason that I can truly have the prasada buddhi without faking it is that I know that in fact the source of ananda is my own being. If I know that, then I can have the Karma Yoga buddhi. Because I understand when I receive everything as prasad from the Lord, right? I know it doesn't really matter what the result of the action is. Doesn't really matter what matters in terms of my well-being or in terms of the experience of my well-being, where I, my mind being able to say all is well with me. What matters is that my mind isn't upset. That's it. It's so simple. Think of it. That's why the prasada buddhi example is so important. It's just, to me, it's so very real. It's such a real example. If you were hoping to get a big meal, and instead you just got a flower, but for you it's prasad, you can have disappointment over the big meal, but no sadness over the flower. That means that you have samatvam. That's the samatvam. Because your mind hasn't gone into a reaction over the result. You went to have the big meal and have that experience. You got the flower. Right? You had a preference, for sure. You for sure had a preference. You wanted this to happen. That's why you went today. Right? You wanted that. And so that the disappointment is there. But there's no reaction to the disappointment. You see what I'm saying? It's not that you said, oh, I never wanted the big meal, you know. It's not a, you know, I didn't really want that. Yes, you did. You went there, you wanted the big meal. You really wanted that. But you didn't get it. You got the flour. Or you got the drops of water. It's even more stark. You got the drops of water that you put it, you know, you just rub through your hair. That's it. No? But there's no reaction. There's no reaction to not getting what you wanted because of the prasada buddhi. But how can you really have that prasada buddhi? You have to understand Ishvara. You have to have a relationship with Ishvara. This has to be Ishvara to you. There has to be an Ishvara. Right? There has to be an Ishvara, there has to be a self. How can you have prasada buddhi if there's no Ishvara, if there's no self? Say, let me make it clear then. Say you're going to the temple because you're a beggar and you know they serve food at the temple, and for you, you're not a mumukshu. You don't even know who Ishvara is. You just know that this temple serves food. That's what you know. You know? And you're hungry. And so you want to go to the temple because there should be food there today. And that's why you go. That's the only reason you go. You don't know about Ishvara. You don't know about puja. You just know that this guy who does this thing, he serves food at the end of it. And then he decides to just give water. What is this? Now what am I going to do? That's samsara. That's what it is. Right? But for a mumukshu who goes to the temple, who recognizes Ishvara, who goes to this temple, this life, your sadhana, this world, is Ishvara, you know? And Ishvara is the karmapaladatta, this whole. This Ishvara means the very being that you are, the conscious being for the jnani, for the one who's the student. What do you know is that your being, the conscious being that you are, this being, this me, the presence that is me, that this presence is the self of Ishvara, of which this body, mind, sense organs is a part. And so I can look as a jiva, this person here, I am in this temple. This is Ishvara. And now, in this temple of Ishvara, I still have kartritvam. Instead of just seeing everything as Ishvara, including this body, mind, sense organs, the whole thing is Ishvara, and just let Ishvara unfold and I just do what's to be done there in as the events occur, I respond to these events that are occurring and engage in them. That's a jnani. But say I'm just learning. Then what do I want to do? I see all of this as Ishvara and here I am with my kartritvam as a jiva in Ishvara. And so then how is the best way for me to respond? I do what I need to do. And I receive through what I want to do, what I need to do, what is there to be done. I do those things and I receive the results as prasad. Because isn't it the truth? Isn't it prasad? If I have an Ishvara buddhi, this Ishvara arpana buddhi means I do actions as praise for the Lord. That's the second stage. I'll get into that in a minute. This first stage, it's just simply accepting the results of my actions as prasad for the Lord. In this siddhi asiddhi, this siddha siddhyoho samaha bhutva, may you be one who has this the sameness of mind which this attitude gives. May you have the sameness of mind in success and failure. Success and failure on this level is, you know, I get the water as prasad and I don't get the big meal. But I have that sameness of mind because prasad. Another level that Shankara deals with, and may you have that same samatva toward your success and failure in doing that. May you view May you have that samatva buddhi, that sameness, and accept as prasad your ability to live up to your knowledge or to, you know, trip with it. May that be prasad also. May you treat the growth and the flowering and the maturing of your own mind as being prasad from Ishvara. That's to me so beautiful, because that really gives you the freedom. Because that means then you are also having a prasad buddhi toward your mind. And toward the growth and the maturing process of your mind, and toward its own successes and failures. You know? The successes and failures in that karma yoga attitude, or in that living up to your knowledge. All of this type of thing. I should have behaved like that. I should have behaved like this. If only I would have done that. If only I would have done that. If I could have done that, I'd be a good person. But look at what I did do. Oh my God. Have the karma yoga. Have that prasada buddhi toward that also. Toward all of the results of your action and all of the results of your attempts. And that's the love. That's where that real... That's where the love comes in. So that in doing that, which Shankara is so astute here, because in doing that, you include the jiva. You include the body, the mind, the sense organs, you know, in Ishvara. And let that all also, means everything about you, be accepted as prasad. Not just this. Because we're normally, okay, we just accept all of this out here as prasad. All of the results, all of the things that come my way, that's prasad. But we exclude accepting ourselves as prasad. And all of the things that our mind does, and the reactions that our mind has, and the sorrows that our mind has, and you were trying to do this with your mind, and look at what it did to you, and you know. So there's a rejection there. So instead, if we can accept that as prasadam also, have the samatvam go that far. So he says, and know that it is that samatvam, that is the yoga, right? That is the yoga. And there's nothing excluded from it. Now, what is so powerful about that? And remember, the samatvam is the prasada buddhi. Right, prasada, you know, is the receiving the gift from the Lord in the temple. That's what prasad is. If you think of that attitude, if you think of how would I receive the drops of water in the temple, you know, just a little aside, when I was in Coimbatore, when I was at the Coimbatore ashram, that Coimbatore ashram, the temple there is beautiful. It's beautiful in, I don't know that it's physically beautiful, maybe it's physically beautiful also. It's beautiful in its sanctity. There's a sanctity there. I think because there's been so much chanting, there's so many prayers there, so many rituals, there's such a bhava there, such a devotion there. And that devotion, I would go when I was at Coimbatore, I would go every morning for their two and a half hour puja. And I would go and just sit there and be there, because it was so beautiful. You know, the atmosphere that was created by that type of devotion. You know, and so I was just thinking as I was talking, how true it would be and when I was imagining myself at that temple, you know, receiving the prasad, which often was just water. Right? It was water, or it was chandan and vibhuti. That's or maybe some flower petals, sometimes something else. And I realized what that meant to me every time to receive that, the sanctity of it, you know. And it has nothing at all to do with what it is. It has nothing to do with what it is. Not that if they gave some treat, I would have enjoyed that. If they gave some, you know, fancy prasada, you think, oh, that's really, look at what they're doing, that's nice. But there would be no difference. I would have that, oh, that's nice, that's fun. But in terms of the way the prasad was received, which was usually water or flower petals, there is no difference at all because of that Ishwara. It's called Ishwara Arpana Buddhi, right? It's because of Ishwara, because you're receiving it from Ishwara. And so that in a temple, in that type of a situation, you have a profound experience of, you can have a very profound experience of that. But that type of profound experience you can cultivate in the world through just being prayerful, recognizing this as Ishwara. And we can recognize this as Ishwara when we know that I am Ishwara. In other words, that the truth of my being is Ishwara. And the ananda that I seek in the world is my being. Because otherwise, Ishwara can be threatening. Because if Ishwara is other than me. See, if Ishwara is other than me, and the ananda is out here, then Ishwara has to behave because I have to be happy. I have to be happy. It's not like I can legitimately or honestly say that it is all right with me to be unhappy. The only reason you can say it is all right with me to be unhappy is because if I have that titiksha, then I will be happy. You know? Oh, it's all right with me to be unhappy, because if I take that attitude, then the one underneath is happy. Right? But it's certainly not all right for the one underneath at the deepest level to be unhappy. So now, if I think that Ishwara himself can rob me of my wholeness, then I can't, with total honesty and total freedom, allow Ishwara to be as Ishwara is. Because it might not be in my best interests. Yeah? But when I know that the self that I am, this innermost being that I am, is Ishwara, and that this creation is my being, it's not at all what is in my best interests. What is in my best interests is allowing Ishwara to be. Allowing the truth to be. Because in allowing that truth, then the ananda that I am, right, is manifest in this mind. Or the ananda that I am, which is always, I don't want you to get mixed up with the swarupa ananda and the experience of happiness. The relaxed mind feels at home with itself. The relaxed mind feels peace. It feels happiness. It feels joy. The tense mind feels unhappiness. Feels stress. It feels anxiety. Right? What I want, what every jiva wants, is to say, all is well with me. The Ishwara Arpana Buddhi, that recognizing all of this as Ishwara, being related to Ishwara, like in the temple, gives my mind that relaxation, right? Which allows the truth of myself to be manifest without any type of obstruction. And so the jnani, the student, the adhikari knows this. And because you know it, you can fully, because you know that, you can fully practice it. It's not fake. You know? And some people think, well, isn't that a selfish way of looking at it? No, it's the true way of looking at it. It's the truth. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there's a famous verse where, I don't know if it's to Gargi or who it is, one of the rishis is saying to his wife, you know, you love your son for the sake of yourself. You love your husband for the sake of yourself. You love your riches for the sake of yourself. You love all of your charities for the sake of yourself. Because these things make you happy. That's why you love them. You love Ishwara because he makes you miserable? No. You love Ishwara for the sake of yourself. You love your Ishta Devata for the sake of yourself. You love for the sake of yourself. Any love that is projected out onto the object is for the sake of yourself. Because you love that, because that thing, whether it be Ishwara, whether it be your Ishta Devata, whether it be the charities you do, whether it be your beloved, whether it be your child, right? That object of love is an object of love because it makes you happy. You love Ishwara because Ishwara, because you delight in Ishwara, because Ishwara makes you happy, because you revel in this creation. Otherwise, you love Ishwara. The Bhagavad Gita talks about this. You love Ishwara, you know, please protect me. I love you, please protect me. I love you, please make me rich. If I love you enough, will you make me rich? If I love you enough, will you protect me? If I love you enough, will you give me these siddhis? That's a samsari's love of Ishwara. There's nothing, I'm not criticizing it. And Ishwara says, in whatever form you worship me, I'll come to you in that form. That whatever you pray for, then I will give you that if it's good for you. If it's meant to be, I can give you that. But from the Ajnani standpoint, I love Ishwara, so please give me this. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, speaking as Ishwara, it is the Jnani that is my greatest devotee. Because the Jnani loves me for me. I love Ishwara because I am Ishwara. This is my being. My being means this self that I am, this creation that I am, this is me. This is my being. I am the whole. I am the subject and I am the object. And so until that kartra throne resolves into that, I am the whole, then let me praise the whole that I experience as Ishwara and receive all of the results of the action as Ishwara. All of the results of my actions as Ishwara. Because that's the truth. Right? And that itself, that attitude itself, gives this shanta. It gives shanti in the mind. Right? It gives the samatvam in the mind that gives my mind a chance to recognize that it's the relaxation and the peace that gives me the ananda, not the objects. And that relative freedom gives my mind the time and the ripeness and the relaxation and gives it the space to gain this knowledge. And as I gain this knowledge, that karma yoga buddhi resolves itself into I am the whole. Right? It resolves itself into what is already kind of being acted out. Resolves itself into a natural state, just a natural state of being. Right? Because in fact, my mind, myself isn't doing anything. Right? And so the kartrutvam and all of the doership and all of these things are really just an expression of my prarabdha, and I'm living it out. And I'm doing what is there to be done naturally, because what else would I do? What else would I do? I'm doing what is here to be done, what is here before me. The Swamiji said, you know, and as the more I mature, the more the truth of it, I revel in the truth of this. He says, I just do what's there in front of me to do. What is here? What is here to do? This is what I do. And that's it. That's what he said. And it's the truth. And it's the truth for all of us, in fact. It's the truth for all of us. We're all just doing here what's in front of us to be doing. Plus a huge projection on whether or not this is going to work out or make me happy, or, you know. Plus this whole overlay, jiva overlay on top of it. And whether I should be doing it or maybe I should be doing that. But if we get rid of that overlay, what are we really doing? We're doing right what is here in front of us to be done. And there's never a time when there's not stuff in front of you to be done. It all becomes very, very simple. I'm going to stop here. Let's take a minute. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Carolina, what is that in the verse, in the imperative to say, you know, do maintain samaputi, whatever the result of your action may be? You know, makes sense and it seems natural once you've been exposed to knowledge. But I remember when I was little and, you know, I first heard these and these verses,
yeah,
and, you know, they were translated, and it felt artificial. You know, I would try to do it, but I was a kid and I didn't understand. I didn't know. And so, normally when these verses are talked about in the Gita, you just say, well, do maintain equipoise. You know, don't be disappointed.
But you don't know what that means.
Yeah. Right, but
yeah.
Also, then what is the point of having it in the imperative? Because you either naturally feel that way or not, depending on...
No, because the way...
Knowledge.
No, because here... We have to remember, now, Krishna's in dialogue with Arjuna. So in the previous verse, he says, you know, this... Know that you are the one who has the adhikara over the karmas, right? And I'm the karma phaladatta. I'm the one that gets the fruits. And he says, so know that. Don't be somebody who's just going after the phala, taking my job, right? And don't not do action either. Then he says, being in this yoga, abiding in this buddhi yoga, from that position do karma. Because he acknowledges, Arjuna is just there now, he's a mumukshu. He's just starting to gain this knowledge. He's still got the kartrutvam. So now as a sadhana, while you're gaining this knowledge, you have the doership, how to react, how to be in the world in a way that gives you that shanti while you're gaining, in this process of gaining knowledge, what is the way, what is the attitude to have in the world that will give the relative shanti?
So that helps with the kind of the lag time then?
Well, yeah, it tells you how to be in the world. You know, as a mumukshu.
Mm-hmm.
Swamiji is really clear on this. So is Krishna in the, you know, the karma yoga is not going to give you knowledge, right? But karma yoga gives you the antakarana shuddhi that allows this knowledge to take place. But who is the one? So there's a like this leads to this type of thing. This gives the type of mind that allows you to really gain the nishtha in this knowledge. But what people have to remember is that the one who is taught karma yoga is the mumukshu who is gaining knowledge, right? So the Karma Yoga, there's two lifestyles. There's living, say if we just go back into India now, there's the lifestyle of living in the world and fulfilling your responsibilities. So you have a married life, you have children, you have a job, you know, you're living in the world with all of these karmas, all of these responsibilities, you know, and things that you have to juggle. That's the situation of a person who lives in the world. And then there's, that person could leave that situation. That person becomes a mumukshu. Here you are in the world. You become a mumukshu. You expose yourself to this teaching. What is better, to stay in this world, exposing yourself to the teaching, or to take sannyasa? This is where the issue is going to stay in the world or take sannyasa. Krishna says it is better to stay in the world, gain knowledge, and do your duties. Do what is meant, what is required of you with a karma yoga buddhi. Right? Stay in the world, fulfill your duties with this karma yoga buddhi. Because that will bear fruit more quickly. Because this becomes what we call a kshatriya, becomes your sadhana. So now, if I'm gaining knowledge, and I'm a mumukshu, and so here I am in the world, Krishna says, better to stay here. Right? Until there's absolutely no reason to stay here, it's better to stay here. Gain the knowledge here. All right, I'm here. How should I be here? How should I be with this world and all of the responsibilities that I have and all of the desires that I have? How should I be with them? And this is how. And then Krishna says, you know, this is better than if you take yourself out of your environment and plop yourself into take sannyasa, and then you don't have a field. Say you still have desires, you still have raga dvesha. You still have likes and dislikes. You still have preferences. And I don't mean birdseed preferences. I want it to be this way. And you have real preferences. You know, you want, and you have things that you want to accomplish. Things that you feel in your life you want to accomplish. For that to, and you're a mumukshu, right? To take yourself out of this field and put yourself into a field like sannyasa, where those things are all denied you. Right? You want them, but they're denied you. Because in sannyasa, you're not supposed to have a job. You're not supposed to have a bank account. You're not supposed to be married or be involved in intimate relationships and these type of things, you know. Making money or becoming a politician or all of these things, you're not supposed to be doing any of that. You're supposed to be studying and meditating. And teaching, studying, meditating, that's it. You just be with this knowledge. That's what you do as a sannyasi. And so now you've removed yourself, your psyche, from the field of experience that where all of your desires, all of your needs, all of your likes and dislikes are. And so what's going to happen to them? Do you think that
they'll go away?
They just what happens is that they're there with no place to, no way to express themselves. And so this way is, if you're in the field, if you're in your life, you know, if you're in your life, then you have an attitude with which to be with these, and let the desires and let the duties and let the life itself, let your knowledge mature in your life with this attitude, which then frees you. So then when you're totally free, and whatever the engagement, let that engagement with the world change organically into whatever it changes into. You know, not everybody, we don't have sannyasa in this country. If you take sannyasa in this country, it's not sannyasa. It's the Western version of sannyasa, where you have to live in an institution or something. No, I mean, that because in, what I mean by that is, like a monastic type of thing. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. If you're ready for that, and that's the type of lifestyle where your raga dveshas, you know, and your preferences can be worked through, because there's nothing here holding you. But even there, say you remove yourself and you drop yourself into a sannyasa or a monastic environment, as long as the kartrutvam is there, right, that karma yoga buddhi is going to be there. You need that. So where do you want to have your karma yoga buddhi? Yeah. The best thing is to have it to be in the cauldron. Yeah.
I wonder if you could say a few words. It seems in order to, as a doer, to accept things, your actions as being prasad, it sort of predisposes that you've really done those actions to the best of your ability, you know, and that you've tried hard to do something. In other words, you've given it your best shot. And that you're even willing maybe to go back and do it again, or maybe you're learning how to do something
and
you're doing it. So I wonder if you could say a few words about that in terms of...
Well, we will
get... No, because sometimes the answer is no, but sometimes the answer is no because you haven't done it properly.
Yeah, and that's where that's...
Persevered.
Exactly. And that's where this siddhi is siddhi, you know? Where you have that summitvam toward your accomplishments and failures. Like, say for instance... You try, you're working in the world, you're trying to accomplish something. And you do it and it doesn't work out. Okay? Then you can see why it doesn't work out. Well, I could have done this or that or this or that or this or that. We do that all the time, right? I should have tried harder. If I would have done this a little better, then that would help. And so now, I try again. But all the while, what is the attitude with which I'm doing all of that? There's a double-decker there. One is I accept the failure of that attempt with prasada buddhi. And the next layer is in, I accept my not having done it right. Also, I have prasada buddhi toward that. So that's what Shankara is talking about. It's two layers. You accept the results of the action, and you also accept your own failure in that. And then you can correct the attempt, and you can correct your the way you've gone about it, and all of that. But even that second layer there becomes a prasada buddhi, and that's what we talk about. That sometimes I talk about that in a different way, in terms of this inner friend, you know, where there's some that attitude that supports, right? That is not, you know, that accepts and then tries to change. There's no reason, let's say, if you fail at something, there's no reason not to try it again. And you might try it again and again and again. You can have prasada buddhi all the way through. Okay, Bhagavan, let me try it this way. There's nothing wrong in that. If the no is said enough times, you might say, okay, I give up. But all the while, the prasada buddhi is there, right?
So that you have to be then like kind of objective about your own inner quality. So, for example, you know, because let's say you mess something up because you're lazy, forgetful, easily distracted, whatever.
Yeah.
And that also is part of the whole.
That's part of the whole thing, and you can have.
It's harder though, in some way. You know.
What do you do with that?
What do you do with it? Well, if you don't like it, you try to change it. But with what attitude do you try to change it? Do you accept that and accepting it try to change it? Or do you hate it? See, the thing is, it's such a simple thing, really. You can accept something as it is, as Ishvara, and then act upon it. That's where you're... Swamiji translates that, your adhikara, that's where your right is to do that. That's your qualification. Hmm. You know? Accepting the result, that's the result that you actually get is Ishvara. So it's from Ishvara. And so say, you accept this mind is a lazy mind. Okay. Here I have this. Bhagavan's lazy mind here.
It's not my lazy mind.
You know? And so now, but I can act on that lazy mind. I can say, okay, we're going to try to do this. Now I'm acting on that. And it's still lazy. Oh, you're still lazy. Okay. But that attitude, there's no hatred in it. There's no tension in it. There's only helping. In the prasada buddhi, really, there's only helping. You know? It, say your mind is anxious, or it's whatever the, it's hurt, it's depressed, it's whatever the emotions are, or there's a part that is self-critical and all of these things that, you know, everybody has to be working with. If you take it really as prasadam, you know, this is what Ishwara has given me, okay, this is it. This is my water instead of my meal, right? This is it. And then I can act on that and I can be with that. So there's just, the thing is there's no hatred. When there's no hatred, there's love, you know? By no hatred means, what that means really, it's not like there's a thing out there called hatred, but there is tension. There's, you know, but in love there isn't tension. But that's the beautiful thing about love. When you feel love or beauty, these were what these words you have, really, the internal experience is one that there's no tension there. You know? It's relaxation.
What does the tension arise from?
Wanting things to be different. It's simple, actually. But why do I want something to be different? Is because I think it'll make me happy. That's why. You know, and that's where the tension comes in. You know? But when you, as you're gaining knowledge as a mumukshu, you recognize over and over and over again that the source of the happiness is your being. That there is no happiness out there. You know, it's not, you can't go find a piece of happiness. It isn't there. The illusion is that whenever you fulfill a desire, your mind has set up these conditions. Oh, if I could have that, I would be happy. So Bhagavan gives it to you. It's an illusion, because you get the object, your mind relaxes, and you're happy. It's just an illusion. What's really happening is that in that relaxed mind, that condition of the sattva, of the mind, reflects your being in a way that allows for the experience of happiness. Right? Your being is always full and complete. It is not. It is different than the reflection in the mirror, than the reflection in the mind. But the reflection in the mind of your being is what we call happiness or joy or the different grades of bliss. All of these are gradients of relaxation in the mind. Right? But say you have recognized the changeless wholeness of yourself, which isn't a gradient. It's just your own presence, this presence. And the mind just relaxes into that. Or just relaxes. That being that you are is really the reason for that experience of bliss. But for a jnani, you don't even bother with any of that. You don't bother because your mind knows all that, and so it's relaxed, and your being, you are what you are. And that the nature of your being is what the mind is in love with. You know, and the nature of your being is a little different than the bliss that's experienced in the mind. But what your mind is really in love with is the nature of you, of the me. That is what is most dear. So we have to kind of make this little distinction too. And that's the truth of it. So there's no reason to become tense or upset. Not really. You know.
Well, could you run that by me one more time about having that prasada buddhi towards, say a depressed mind or a lazy mind? How does that go again?
It goes like this. If, say, Say you can't get yourself to, say you really want to do something like your taxes. Okay. Getting close. There's not much time left.
Let's not talk about that.
And you know, you just find that you just keep sitting there and sitting there, and you're just frozen. You can't get yourself to do it.
Stuck.
You're stuck. Okay. Stuck. And so now you say to yourself, "I hate myself because I hate myself." Because I can't make myself move, right? That's not prasada buddhi.
I realize that.
Right. So, but what would be prasada buddhi? Well, first of all, on the one level, you really want to do your taxes and you just can't make yourself do the taxes. So then you can say, you know, okay, I'm not doing the taxes. I accept that as great as Bhagavan, right? Now I'm going to try to do the taxes. Okay. This next. Now I'm going to try to do these taxes. All right. And so you say, all right, I'm going to try to do these taxes. I'm going to try. I'm really going to try.
And still nothing happens.
And so then nothing's happening. So then what do you say? I hate myself because nothing's happening.
Well, maybe yeah, the admiration kind of melts away.
Okay, but there's something important here.
Yeah.
If you don't hate yourself for what's happening, you know, if you don't hate yourself and do take it as a prasada buddhi, then you can act on it. Because we're not going toward inaction either. And if you can't act on it, then this, we're actually getting into it, going to get into something else that's called kaushalam. There's two sides to this karma yoga. I haven't talked about this. But there's then gaining what we call how to become skillful in action. How to do dharma. How to know what to do in a given situation. How to seek help. You know? How to seek help. How to ask for help. And what stops me, a lot of times what stops me from asking for help or asking or getting what I need to actually accomplish something is that self-hatred. You know, not accepting the situation or not having a prasada buddhi toward my asiddhi, not being able to do something. It's a big thing to have prasada buddhi toward my failures. If you have prasada buddhi toward your failures, you don't call them failures. You don't say, oh, Ishwar, look at it. You're just such a darn failure. It's that this thing is not working, you know. You are not a failure. If your failure, if something is failing, you're not able to do it, does it make you a failure? Right? So there's an objectivity. So if you don't think of yourself as a failure, but you're having trouble doing this, then you can get somebody to help you. You have freedom inside. It gives you space inside. So there's ways of, you have to look at that kind of stuff. But prasada buddhi is a good start because, a wonderful start because now you start relating to the world as Ishwara, which the world is. You know? Instead of seeing yourself as just kind of a lone cowboy in the world, you know, going through the inert, insentient world, this little blob of consciousness, you have to make your own way, you know, and people will be, you're just a little, you know, bubble of consciousness that, and you have to make your own way through the world, and these other people are all going, you're going to be negotiating with all these other little bubbles of consciousness who have things to say about you, and you have things to say about them. That's all there is. Yucky. Yuck, it's really gruesome. It's gruesome.
Charlie Brown mind.
Mm-hmm. But you know what, if you see all of this as Ishwara, it's just not that you're seeing it all as Ishwara. It is all Ishwara, you know. You have to recognize that this is just, it's all your being, it's all consciousness. And so that knowledge has to become clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer. You know, and we have to just provide an environment for that knowledge to be able to take root so that you can see it. I feel like my talking is getting a little circular.
Well, isn't that how the understanding goes?
Yeah.
So, you know, in the Gita, it's taken sort of as a life manual for people mm-hmm. of various stages and various ages.
Yeah.
And so, prasada bhakti, for instance, makes sense, you know, if you've been exposed to some knowledge. But if you were to try and explain this to a child and say, it doesn't matter, you tried to get this, but you know, it didn't happen. So, try to be even-minded in this. Now, how would you say something like that to a child or to an jnani, you know? How would you explain
that? Well, a child is probably different to an jnani, but for an... That's an interesting question. I mean, the thing that comes to the top right away is that, say, if not a child, but an adult,
yeah.
It would depend on what they wanted to know.
Right.
So it might not explain anything.
And to a child, it would just sort of be, not talk about Ishvara necessarily, or maybe you would.
Well, I think I probably would.
Yeah.
And don't you talk about Ishvara to Arjuna?
Yeah.
And Krishna and all of the stories?
Yeah.
Stories are wonderful because especially for a child, because if they see how, you know, Krishna or Rama or, you know, Arjuna behaves in a certain situation, then like Arjuna will say, I am Arjuna, you know. But he's seen over and over again, you know, how Rama and Krishna and Arjuna and all of these people behave in different situations. And then start understanding about the Lord in the form of Arjuna, in the form of Krishna.
No. Isn't it true, though, that children go through stages of being able to use their reason? So, I mean, in a way, a young child will only be able to kind of take it only so far.
That's
and
right. That's
mature, you're thinking.
That's right, and that's why stories are good, and that's why mm-hmm. mothers tell their children stories.
Yeah.
You know? Even with Pami telling, you know, he's telling all of the Mahabharata and everything. And these stories, the stories are wonderful because they hold and they hold so much knowledge, you know, in the story. A child learns so much that way. And then as they're older, you tell them, you know, what they're ready to know. And I think children, limited experience with children, they're very inquisitive, you know. And I've seen Swamiji work with children also. They have all kinds of questions, you know, all kinds of questions. And he'll talk to the children about Vedanta in a child's version,
mm-hmm.
and the child's version of Vedanta, what would be useful for a child's mind.
Yeah, I used to go to those talks.
They're wonderful.
Growing up.
The children are some of the best talks.
Yeah.
I get so much out of them. I love them.
Yeah. I can relate.
I remember some of the stories, you know, like in the Bible. I got a little bit of Sunday school when I was a kid. There was that one part. There's a story of Moses. And, you know, the king is out to kill him. And it's very similar to Krishna in some ways. And Jesus and all of the great ones. But anyway, so his mother puts him in a basket into the river. And I was like, how could a mother do that? You know, the poor baby's going to drown, you know? And I got really off on a tangent about that. And I couldn't understand the story because it just didn't make sense to me. No mother in their right mind would put a baby and a little thing made out of reeds into the river.
Well, but they do, because karma.
Karma.
So these are kind of archetypal things.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see that. The same thing, Sean. All right, well, we're going to be in this karma yoga world for a while.
We can circle around some more.
Yeah.
It's good for us to spend some time just kind of sitting in the world of karma yoga. And
What comes after this karma yoga part?
More karma yoga. the Bhagavad Gita goes in and out. A lot of Ishvara, a lot of karma yoga, but it doesn't lose sight of knowledge. It does not at all lose sight of Ishwara. I am the whole.
Yeah.
Really beautiful that one.
It just makes so much more sense in light of Vedanta.
But the Bhagavad Gita is Vedanta. You know?
Yeah, I think that's why I asked about the chant, you know, because I think when I was little and I heard these verses, they somehow seemed to add more complexity, you know, it kind of made sense to be that way. But it was hard to be that way. It was hard for me to be even minded in the
because
basis.
you don't know how to do that. You don't know what that is.
Right. And so
it's like saying be even minded. It's fine with me to be unhappy.
Right.
No, it isn't.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you struggle to be something artificial.
Yeah.
Seems.
Exactly. You try to make it work.
Right.
Because it's supposed to, but you know inside that it's not.
Right.
It's not the truth.
It's not taking.
Right. It's not real.
Or that you're only Ishwara. When you're being good, when you're good.
Yeah.
Just the good you.
Yeah. Gosh, it's so wonderful to have a self that's free of opposites.
What?
Your self is free of opposites. It's not good or bad. It's not going to, it can't be bettered. It can't be made worse. It can't be made better. You are what you are. Your being is your being. That's it. And it's ananda. That's what the ananda is, you know.
But it just seems like so much in the Gita is also sort of objective and, you know, commonsensical. It's beyond. It's not, you know, even without knowledge of Ishvara and spirituality, you know, just
it's very practical.
Just makes a very yeah.
It's very practical. Yeah.
Seems really the practical side of Vedanta. You know, it's
it does because it's really sits you in life.
Right.
Here you are in life with knowledge. Yeah, it's really good that way. All right.